and welcome to the Real Fix podcast, a brand new series from the Real Fix team, your fix of real life stories. I'm Hattie Bishop, I'm a journalist, and I help people share their stories with the world's media. Each week, I'll be joined by my fellow journalists from the news desk to introduce you to some incredible people sharing their remarkable stories. For the first episode of this podcast, we meet the heartbroken stepmum of Jodie Chesney, the poor teenager who was murdered in a case of mistaken identity.
The paramedics tried to do what they could in the park, and they were taking her to the nearest trauma unit, which was the Royal London in Whitechapel. But the paramedics said that they couldn't get her there in time, so the surgeon was in a car on his way to meet the ambulance. And I think they got as far as Redbridge before they pulled over in a petrol station and tried to bring her back there, but it was too late.
And we're also speaking to one woman with a very unusual habit. She loves to eat talcum powder.
If I'm, say, sitting in the living room or something like with my partner and that, I am thinking about it. I'm thinking, right, when I go downstairs, I'm going to go and do some talcum powder.
What's the longest you've been without it?
Probably about 2 days. And I did miss it, and I need to go to the shop and go and get some.
It was a story which led the national news, the murder of Jodie Chesney. An innocent 17-year-old minding her own business in a park in Essex, stabbed to death in what later turned out to be a case of mistaken identity. We've helped her stepmum, Joanne Chesney, tell her story. In a heartbreaking interview, Katie Pearson spoke to Joanne about the day Jodie was cruelly taken from her.
To be fair, the first time I met her, she didn't say a word. She was so quiet and shy that she barely spoke to anybody. But kind of as I got to know them, she came out of her shell even more. But she reminds me of, or reminded me of me when I was that age.
On the day that Jodie died, how did the day begin?
It was just a normal working day, really. I'd been talking to Jodie in the early afternoon because she didn't have a birthday present for him yet, because she only got paid that day. And we were talking about what to get him and what sizes and stuff that he needed. And just general chit-chat.
Yeah.
And then we kind of, left it. And just, I said, oh, we'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then she went off with her friends and I went to meet Pete for drinks.
Did you see her that day or was that the last
time? No, the last time I saw her was the day before. We'd got home late from work and she was just getting ready to go to Scouts. And it was literally like a brief 10-minute conversation. We'd bought some sweets from the shop on the way home and she just couldn't smile big enough. She was so easily pleased, happy with everything you gave her.
What did she have planned that day then when you're going out for Peter's birthday?
We didn't actually know. She spent a lot of time at her boyfriend's house because it got to a point where we said to her one day, so do you actually still live with us because we don't see you anymore? And she just laughed, but she was absolutely besotted with her boyfriend and he was with her as well. So as far as we knew, she was just going to go and hang out with her friends and do what they normally did on a Friday night.
So what happened that evening then? You went out to celebrate. What happened?
Yeah, so I left the bar a little bit early because I couldn't really handle my drink, so I decided to go back to the hotel and Pete said, I'm just going to finish this next round and then I'll come and join you. And then I just got settled in the apartment, had a drink in bed waiting for him to come back, and the phone went about an hour later and I assumed it was him wanting to come into the front door because we only had one key. But I wasn't obviously prepared for what happened next.
So what did happen next? What was the call?
Well, he could barely talk. He was absolutely devastated. And he just said, Jodie's been stabbed and she's dead. And no one could actually believe at the time what was going on. So I literally just grabbed all of my stuff, got everything together, jumped in the cab and made my way back to the house. I had to call his brother on the way just to say to him, look, please tell me that he's got something wrong here. And his brother just said, look, I wish I could.
So what happened next? You got home and were the police there?
No, the police had already gone by that point. I think this was about, I think I got in about 11 o'clock. And they'd just dropped Pete off because they picked him up from the bar that we were in and they were going to take him to the hospital. But halfway to the hospital, they got a phone call from the controller to say, take him home because she hasn't made it. So they took him home. And by the time I'd got there, the family were all there. And, yeah, we were just kind of going through the motions.
Yeah. And what did they tell you had happened? Did they give you any information about what happened so far?
All they could tell us was she'd been in a park in Howard Hill with her friends. Two people had come in, attacked her from behind and run away. And her friends had said they'd all given statements to the police saying that there was no confrontation, there was no words spoken between them. And they didn't know who it was. They didn't recognise anyone because it happened so quickly. And the police basically said, look, we've got nothing to go on here, but we will try our best.
You had to break the news to a few people as well. Can you tell me a bit about
that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I told my parents in the cab on the way home, and they obviously came round straight away. But then I thought, because we'd started to see things on social media about something happening in the area, so I thought it was best for us to tell her real mother what had happened before she saw it on the news. So I didn't have any contact details for her apart from on Facebook. So I kind of looked her up and sent her and her sisters a message saying that please call me on this number as soon as you can. It doesn't matter what time of day or night it is, just please call me. And it was actually her sister that got through to me first. So I explained what happened to her. And then not long after, Claire called me to confirm the story. Because the last thing I'd wanted, although she didn't have a relationship with the girls, the last thing I'd want is her to find out without someone without one of us telling her that her daughter had gone.
They were trying to take Pete to the hospital, but they didn't quite make it. What happened exactly?
Well, the paramedics tried to do what they could in the park, and they were taking her to the nearest trauma unit, which was the Royal London in Whitechapel. But the paramedics said that they couldn't get her there in time, so the surgeon was in a car on his way to meet the ambulance. And I think they got as far as Redbridge before they pulled over in a petrol station and tried to bring her back there, but it was too late.
I'm sorry. What effects did Jodie's death have on your relationship with Peter? How did you both cope?
We didn't really. Sorry.
Take your time.
Yeah, I think we didn't prepare us for what happened. And we just didn't know how to cope with it.
Yeah.
And obviously that tore us apart. But thankfully now we're trying to rebuild our relationship so we can at least be friends.
Okay, take your time.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, it's okay.
Yeah, we just ended up taking out a grief on each other and decided that it was best to kind of separate for a while.
Can you tell me a bit about the case going to court? How you felt about it?
I was at the court almost every day because I wanted to find out the answers. I wanted to see these people, make them see what they've done to us, what they've taken away. And it was hard. It was a long 8 weeks, and we still didn't find out what we needed to know. But hopefully they'll suffer. They'll be in prison for a long time now. But it's just hard watching them kind of pass the blame between each other because no one cared enough to take responsibility for what they'd done.
The outcome, I suppose, of the court case and the results, how you felt, you know, if justice has been served, I guess.
I suppose you can say justice has been served on two of them, at least. But personally, I don't believe that the four of them didn't know what was going on. I think the other two should have had some kind of sentence for their part in it. But if whatever happens, nothing will bring Jodie back. But at least we have some kind of assurance that they can't do this to someone else. Not for a long time, anyway.
Do you think you could ever forgive what they've done, or do you think it's just unforgivable?
No, because they don't care what they've done. So they proved themselves that they were only looking out for themselves. They didn't care what they'd done to her or what they'd done to us. So they don't deserve our forgiveness. They've never even apologised for what they've done, because they still deny it.
And why are you sharing Jodie's story now? What are you hoping to do?
Just to kind of keep her memory alive and show people that this could happen to normal families. This could happen to anyone. And I think that's why a lot of people felt they were so involved with the story, because they felt like they knew her, and they felt like they wanted to know the kind of person she was. And I just hope that they can see how good she was inside and out.
What kind of person was she?
She was so lovely. I mean, I know most parents are biased, but she really was the kindest, sweetest person. She would do anything for anybody. I always wonder why didn't we just arrange to go out with family for his birthday? And this might not have happened.
What an incredible lady. You just can't even begin to imagine what the poor family have been through. Well, to conclude this story, I can tell you that drug dealer Svensson Onakwi, who is 19, and 17-year-old runner Aarons Isaacs were found guilty of murder. Onakwi was given a life sentence with a minimum term of 26 years, and Isaacs will be detained for at least 18 years. Two co-defendants were cleared of murder. Now, don't move a muscle, because there's plenty more of that on the way, including the granny who married her toy boy fiancé, who was younger than her son.
We often have a little kiss in the supermarket queue or pinch each other's buns and everything. And to be quite honest, most people, not that we worry about what they're doing, but most people have a little chuckle or a smile or say, oh, we knew it was you two, or something like that. It's quite sweet, really.
If you want to hear more stories like this, click subscribe or follow on your favourite podcast platform. Next, this has to be the strangest addiction anyone can have. Lisa eats talcum powder. She's been at it for 15 years now, and it all started when she got the urge to try it after having a bath. And the habit seems to have got more intense ever since. She spent around £8,000 on Johnson's baby powder, scoffing it off the back of her hand every 30 minutes. The mum of five spoke to us about why she can't stop her unusual habit and explained to Laura, Harriet, Olive and myself how she's getting help.
Well, my youngest one, he's 15 now. So it was while I was pregnant with him, it was like the smell of it. It was like, I used to really like crave the smell of it. And I actually craved, this is really strange, the smell of Hoover bags. You know when you use Shaken Vac?
Yeah.
And the smell, it was like a smell of Hoover bags as well. But I've never ate anything like that. That's just, that went.
That's too far.
It was mainly when, it was when I was pregnant with him, just like the smell of it. And I used to eat mints a lot as well, like the extra strong mints. I craved them as well.
This has the same sort of like chalky texture.
Yeah. But it has to be like the tree ball. It can't be spearmint or anything like that, but it has to be the the tree ball month, the ones like the green ones.
And how did you move on for having that craving in your pregnancy to actually eating it for the first time? And talk us through that.
Well, I'd like obviously when he was born in there, and I used to like use the talcum powder. I used to like lick it off my hands, and that just went on for like quite a while. It wasn't like all the time I'd do it. It was just, you know, sometimes I wouldn't even realise I was doing it. And then it was only probably about 4 years ago, that is when I actually started eating it, as in pulling it on my hand, you know, eating it. And then I didn't really think much of it. I just didn't really think much of it. And I never told anybody. I just, you know, every now and again when I, you know, I had the talcum powder and that, I'd just like eat it.
And so how is it that you do eat it? You put it on your hand and then what?
Yeah, I just like put it on my hand and then like I just eat it like that. But I've started talking, I've been talking to somebody who's like, that's the same thing. And she told me like, I said to her like, how do you do it and that? And she said she just tips it in her mouth. And I've seen it on YouTube and I've started doing that now. I don't
really. So it's a bit quicker.
Makes less mess as well.
That's a good point. Yeah, no, that's a good point.
And I'm not doing that all the time.
What is it that you get from it?
It's like, I don't know, it's like a satisfaction of eating it, and it's like, it's the taste. It's like, it's hard to explain. It's like when you've like have a really, really bad craving. And like your mouth's watering for that craving, and then it's like the taste of it. It's just a lovely taste.
Well, what does it actually taste like? Can you liken it to anything at all?
It's like a mild, like soapy taste. Like I got my partner to try it, and she said it's like tastes like a really like soap. She didn't like it. It's like a really like soapy taste.
And how much do you do like a bit of a oomph, like a spoonful? Like how much do you actually put on your hand? Or
it's normally like quite a bit, about a tablespoonful. But then if I'm doing it on my hand, I do like a tablespoonful and have like about 5 or 6 or 7 at the time. Or if I'm doing it in my mouth, I'm like probably about 3 or 4, just. But it's obviously it's quite big ones.
Yeah,
no. But that does worry me, because I thought, well, what if I choke on it?
Have you ever choked on it?
No.
There we go.
And how often are you eating it? Like lots of times throughout the day?
It is quite a lot of day. It is quite a lot. It's where I spend a lot of time, like downstairs in my bedroom, because I just enjoy just peace and quiet and that. I do it quite a lot downstairs. It's probably, I can do one of those big bottles. It's starting to be like one of those big bottles in probably just over a day.
Oh my
and like
goodness.
One of the small ones I can actually just do in a day.
Oh my gosh. So and does it have to be a particular type?
Yeah, the Johnson's, the normal one, the white one. I've tried the other ones, but didn't really have that
you
much
don't like
effect.
Any of like the lavender,
no.
Or anything like that?
No,
just the original.
Yeah, it just has to be the Johnson's one.
And how much do you think you spend on it?
I get them on Amazon. You can get like a pack of 6 of them, and it's about £7. And then when I go to Morrison's, like if I go shopping and that, I'll get normally about 2 big bottles of them as well. They're like £1.50 each, so it's probably over £10 a week.
And I know for quite a long time you kept it secret. Why did you keep it secret for such a long time? What were the feelings that made you do that?
I think it's because I thought, you know, they'd think I was just being stupid or just tell me to stop doing it. But I knew I couldn't stop doing it because I was craving it.
And have you ever tried to stop doing it?
I did. I was in a bad relationship, and she wouldn't let me. She's very controlling, and she wouldn't let me do it. And it was a case of because where I was, obviously how bad it was, I couldn't do it. But when she would go out or hospital or something like that, then I would buy it, and I would like buy one of the small ones, and I would make sure I do it while she's not there.
How does it feel when you're not able to do it? How does that leave you feeling?
I do crave it. I miss it. If I'm, say, sitting in the living room or something like with my partner and that, I am thinking about it. I'm thinking, right, when I go downstairs, I'm going to go and do some talcum powder.
What's the longest you've been without it? Has it been days, weeks? Ever been that long?
Probably about 2 days. Yeah, probably about 2 days. And I did miss it, and I, you know, it's like, I need to go to the shop and go and get some.
Because it's been about 15 years, is that right, that you've been eating it for? So I suppose if you're spending £10 a week, that might work out to nearly like £8,000 or something over those years. Yeah. It sounds like quite a lot, really, doesn't it, for your habit?
Because when it got mentioned about 8,000, I thought, no, it can't be that much. And then I thought to myself, but no, if you work out over 15 years, it's going to have been that amount.
It all adds up, doesn't it?
I did mention to the doctor about it, and she was a bit like, okay. She hadn't really heard of it. But then obviously when I went back to see her again, that's when she said, you know, it is picker. And that's when I spoke. They said to me, like, I need to speak to mental health about it. They said it's like a form of an OCD because it's like a compulsion.
Sure. And I know you kept it secret for a really long time. When did you eventually sort of confess to your loved ones and your friends, and what was their reaction like?
Well, my ex-partner, she caught me doing it, and she was just like, what are you doing? And I just got very quite defenceless about it because I thought, well, she's making fun of me. And but nothing more got said about it by her. She just knew I was doing it, but she never saw me do it. I never like did it in front of her or anything. And my daughter, she noticed me doing it because when because my daughter lived with me for a while with my granddaughter, and when I'd bath her and get her like dressed and that, I'd use talcum powder and I'd lick it off my hands, and she'd say, like, you know, why are you doing that? And I don't know. I just think we just laughed along with it, really, and nothing really, nobody really made an issue about it, to be fair. And
just said, oh, but, that's just Lisa. That's just what she does.
Yeah, yeah. they weren't, because obviously at that time I wasn't eating it right at that time, but it was only a little while later when I did start like properly eating it, when, you know, that's when I confess, you know, I am actually eating it.
And do you think people are a little bit more worried now that, you know, like you said, your doctor said it might be actually to do with a mental health problem and you're eating more and more? Do you think your friends and family are getting more worried now, or do they know that you're, you know, you've got it under control and it's fairly harmless?
My partner, she hates me doing it. She just doesn't like it because she knows, because obviously they've said it could cause cancer and that, but that's not true. But so she doesn't like it because, you know, it is harmful. My sister and my daughter, they're like, they know it's not good for me, but they know I'm going to try and get help to stop doing it.
And how does it affect your appetite? Do you still want normal food as well? And do you still eat meals, or is this?
Yeah, it doesn't like substitute for food or anything like that. It's not like it fills me up or anything like that.
What's it do to your mouth as well? Because I imagine it's quite dry when after you've taken a few swallows.
It does make my mouth like dry, like the roof of my mouth and that.
Do you guzzle it down with a big chunk of water, or?
Or just anything really, like a bit of fizz or juice or anything really. I don't really tend to drink much water, but.
And are you hoping there's something that, you know, people can do in the future to wean you off it, or do you want to stop?
See, I think I'd miss it, to be fair. I know it's to do with iron levels, because I do have very low iron, and I know it is to do with iron levels, and I know once I get my iron under control, I might not crave it that much, but then I might miss it where it's become like a habit of doing. I'd have to try and break the habit.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about that? Is that something that you want to do, or what are your feelings about that?
I don't really want to stop doing it, to be fair, but I know it, you know, I don't know what it could be doing to me inside, but I know I don't want to stop, but I know I'll have to stop.
I wonder if there's something they could replace it with. Do the tree bore mints that have that sort of chalky texture, could you move just onto mints, or do they not quite cut it?
They do, but when I eat mints, I can buy like a pack of six of them, and I can eat them within a day. Mm. Within a couple of hours.
You must have lovely fresh breath.
You know, I was just about to say, I have really nice smelling breath. I have kelp powder or mint.
What a difficult craving to manage by the sounds of things. We do hope Lisa gets all the help she needs. If you like that, head to Facebook and search for Real Fix, where you'll find our page, which has more stories just like it, along with extra pictures and videos to go with the stories we feature on this podcast. Next, and how about this for an unusual partnership? Edna is 83 and a retired engineer. Back in 2003, she went to a concert at her local theatre where she met Simon. And it was love at first sight. But Simon was 40 years younger than her. He'd never had a girlfriend before, but was now smitten with this plucky pensioner. My colleagues Laura, Harriet and Charlotte joined me in the studio to speak to this loving couple.
My friend said to me, let's go over to the Odeon in Weston. And there's a concert on there, on the tin organ they got there. And that's where... me and Ed met, you know, in the stage door, as it were.
He came in through the stage door, and I just gave him a little kiss on the cheek, but he hung on, and we had a head-to-toe kiss, and it's been like that ever since.
Oh, wow, oh. That was quick then. So was it love at first sight, or what were your sort of first impressions of each other?
Yes, it was at first sight.
Oh, yes, definitely much at first sight, because it was very strange what happened. We just looked at each other, and because Edna was the secretary of the society that looks after the organ and kept going at the time, she naturally is a very demonstrative person, and she came along and gave me a great big hug, and then I gave her a hug, and all of a sudden, that was it. Literally.
Oh, wow.
Boom.
And how old were you both at the time?
Well, Ed was about 69, weren't you?
I was about 69 at the time.
Wow.
So who made the first move? Sorry to interrupt you there, Simon. Who made the first move then, do you think?
Oh, right. Well, it was a mutual thing. It actually happened simultaneously. we both recognised that there was something there straight away.
Wow.
So... that's really, it is how it happens. It sounds like it's something out of a really corny film, a very badly written film, but it wasn't. That is exactly what happened. We both literally ran into each other's arms.
Oh, it sounds so romantic.
And what was the reaction like from other people to your guys' relationship at first? Were people quite supportive of the pair of you, or did you get any backlash for the age gap between you both?
Well, I think Edna can best answer that.
Well, actually, we rang up our organ friend, the one I'd been working with running the concert, and a few months later, about 5 months later, and said to him, oh, guess what? We've got engaged. And his reply was reasonably typical of all our friends and acquaintances. He said, about bloody time, and hung the phone up.
Well, you guys don't hang around, do you?
What about your family and friends? Were they shocked at all?
Well, my parents, I think, were a bit surprised, and I don't think they were terribly keen. In fact, I know they weren't terribly keen. But to be fair to them, they sort of went along with it because I think they were, you know, just happy that I'd found somebody. I wasn't looking for anybody.
So were your children older than Simon at that time, or were they a similar sort of age?
Oh, no, my Simon will be 45 tomorrow, and my son's 57. My grandchildren are more the age that Simon is, and they're, you know, they nobody takes any notice. And the people here, I don't know whether you know the people in the West Country, but they're very warm and friendly, and they're not very judgmental.
If Simon's similar sort of age of them, is it ever, do you ever have any of those situations where people sometimes mistake him for someone other than your husband?
Well, we once had a very satisfactory incident in one of the local chippies. We were in there having some lunch, and it did make me laugh. I'll tell you, we get a lot of coach trips here, and we get a lot of coach trips with clubs and groups come for the day, and a lot of little ladies about my own age from Wales were here having their lunch. And as we went to go out, Simon, of course, being the gentleman he is, picked up my coat and held it for me. And as we squeezed in between the tables, one of these little ladies said to me, "Oh, he's helping his nan." I said, "He's helping his wife. He's helping his wife, and I'm the one who's laughing."
Oh, my goodness. I bet she went bright red, did she?
No, not at all. Not at all. It doesn't mean anything to us, quite frankly. Several of our friends had been living with different partners that had age gaps and wouldn't get married because they had an age gap. I mean, one was as long as 15 years. That's extraordinary.
I hope you don't mind me asking this, Edna, and you let me know if I'm being a bit cheeky. But
I will.
Good. I wondered how things work for you guys between the sheets. Are you quite active with each other, or are you just more friends?
Oh no, we're not just really not. When you love each other as much as Simon and I love each other, it'd be reasonably impossible to keep your hands off each other, let alone other bits of your anatomy.
Oh wow! Okay, so things are still pretty healthy in that department.
Yes, and we often have a little kiss in the supermarket queue or pinch each other's bums and everything. And to be quite honest, most people, not that we worry about what they're doing, but most people have a little chuckle or a smile or say, "Oh, we knew it was you two," or something like that. It's quite sweet, really. But Simon and I both think and feel, and he'll tell you the same, that there's not enough love in this world, and it doesn't really matter if a green caterpillar falls in love with a bunch of seaweed. There's not enough love, and it's really lovely to be able to love someone and be loved and to express that love.
Edna and Simon there. I guess there's hope for us all. And that's it for this episode of the Real Fix podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you want to hear more, please click subscribe or follow on your favourite podcast platform. And don't forget, you can read more of our stories on our website, real-fix.com. And do follow us on Twitter and Facebook at RealFixUK. If you've got a story for us, please let us know. Bye for now.